Hello, welcome to the Hudson Institute. I'm Nina Shea, and I direct the Center for Religious Freedom here. I have with me today a very important person in today's world, and that is Reverend Johnny Moore, who is the executive chairman of the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. And Johnny and I have worked together for many years, it's been really a decade, working on peace and helping besieged peoples in the Middle East. And so you have other hats that you wear, one of which was being a commissioner on the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, where I also served as a commissioner, a different point of time. And I'm very grateful for you taking the time out of your incredibly busy schedule over several continents to talk to us today to help us walk us through these issues, major controversy surrounding what is going on in the control of the distribution of food aid in Gaza. And really what we're seeing is an issue that's emerging that whoever controls this food aid distribution controls Gaza. That's how this issue is being framed by, critics of Israel and the whole situation in Gaza. But Johnny, welcome. And we'd love to hear about what the foundation is doing and what you have achieved so far.
First of all, Nina, it's great to be here at the Hudson Institute. You know, I, as a young religious freedom and human rights advocate, I first encountered the Hudson Institute through you. I was concerned about a declining Christian community in the Middle East, mm-hmm. and I remember I was always a writer, and so I wrote an editorial that said, calling for us to be more concerned about the
Fox News.
That's exactly yeah. right. And then all of a sudden, one of the first things I'd ever published, and I get an email from this place called the Hudson Institute and the legendary Nina Shea. And in many, many ways, in so much of my my career as a religious freedom advocate. Is somehow intertwined with Hudson and with, and I'm quite inspired by your work. So it's always great to be with you and to be with you again. There is no difference between my concern for religious freedom and human rights and my motivation for being involved in the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. You know, as a religious Christian, there is nothing more Christian than feeding hungry people, and there's nothing more profane than when food is used by a terrorist organization in order to control a repressed and oppressed people. And the people of Gaza have always been the first victims of Hamas. And we're starting to discover, everyone sort of knew there were problems with the aid system in the Gaza Strip. It was an aid-based economy for many, many years. We've all seen these images of like whole convoys of trucks going into the Gaza Strip, and they're immediately taken over by armed militants, by Hamas militants.
But wait, isn't the UN distributing the food in the Gaza Strip?
Exactly. So UNRWA, which is the UN agency that was mainly responsible for humanitarian food in the Gaza Strip, there's been all kinds of controversy around UNRWA. You know, I've read reports that as many as half of the UNRWA employees in the Gaza Strip were linked to Hamas. There are reports that UNRWA employees held hostages over the course of this conflict. But even apart from UNRWA, which, by the way, in the United States now, the Department of Justice issued an opinion a few months ago that UNRWA, the international organizational immunity that generally is applied to the UN, it's the position of the Department of Justice in the United States that UNRWA doesn't qualify for that because of aside from the legal opinion from the Department of Justice, this opinion corresponds with a number of cases working their way through the courts in the United States about Americans who are victims of terrorism, you know, at the hands of Hamas. Putting all that aside, the fact is that every ounce of food that went into the Gaza Strip when Hamas was in charge was somehow under the control of Hamas. Either by violence or threats of violence, sometimes voluntarily. The food would be warehoused in warehouses Hamas could control. Over the course of this war, There are reports that Hamas actually communicated with fighters through UN convoys, moved fighters via these convoys. So aid has become at the heart of this conflict and prolonging this conflict. Those are all the pieces of context where the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation enters.
And I just read that Hamas was actually selling some of this food.
More than selling it, they were actually monetizing it on multiple levels. They would tax the food when it came into the Gaza Strip. They would take a certain portion of the food and they would award it to their fighters or their allies. Mm-hmm. They would sometimes use it to recruit more fighters, and then they would sell some of it. And so, you know, there's some reports that Hamas made $1 billion or more, even over the course of this war, just through commoditizing the aid in the Gaza
Strip. And they
were
buying weapons with it, presumably.
Yeah, I mean, they were doing all kinds of nefarious mm-hmm. things. I mean, imagine you get the whole international community gives you mm-hmm. free food, and you can do with it what you want. And right. if you sell it for 50 cents, like, in, you know, it's mm-hmm. your profit is, you know, 50 cents. And this is definitely the case, and it had prolonged this conflict. So a lot of people recognize this issue, and this is a bipartisan controversy. So the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation comes on the scene and says, like, we have one mission as an organization, which is to get food directly to the people of Gaza, without having to go through the intermediary of Hamas. So the mission is really simple. It's just to feed the people of Gaza. That's the mission. Mm-hmm. There's nothing more than that. Get as much food as possible to the people of Gaza.
And it started in June. End of May, June.
That's right. So after the breakdown of the ceasefire, basically, we've been operating in the war, okay? Not in a ceasefire. We've been operating in two wars, because over half of the time, you know, that we were operating in the Gaza Strip, we had a second war. We had the 12-day war between Iran and Israel.
That's right.
And our guys and ladies on the ground, they, who, by the way, are incredibly experienced. Like, you know, one of our leaders on the ground spent 30 years in the aid community. All of our contractors on the ground that are facilitating the secure convoy, we basically created a humanitarian convoy, humanitarian convoys and a humanitarian corridor in order to transport the aid into the Gaza Strip so the trucks aren't diverted. What this looks like today, Nina, is we will soon surpass 100 million meals of food delivered to the people of Gaza. We have directly served half of the people of Gaza through four distribution sites and a community distribution mechanism that we've created that takes food further, more deeply into the Gaza Strip, into the north of the Gaza Strip. This should not be controversial. Mm-hmm. Everyone in the world should be celebrating this.
But your staff, your workers were shot at and some killed
at the beginning
of this operation. Tell us about this, because this is lost. I remember reading it at the time, and it's rarely mentioned these days.
These people are heroes.
Palestinians,
these people
right?
are heroes. These are 12 Gazans, 12 Palestinians that were murdered by Hamas, many more that were injured by Hamas.
In the process of distributing.
Yeah, so what Hamas, first of all, like 3 days before this happened, Hamas issued a direct threat to anybody that goes to get our aid or anybody that helps us distribute aid, their lives are threatened. We begged the United Nations, we begged countries all around the world, the international community, issue a statement telling Hamas humanitarian aid workers are off limits. No one responded. And then one day, 12 of our local Gaza aid workers are brutally murdered. Others are injured. And Hamas piles them in front of the Al Nasser Hospital in Gaza and refuses to allow them to get any medical treatment at all. And these people, Palestinians, they died just trying to feed their neighbors. And that wasn't the end of it. You know, Hamas also threatened the Americans, you know, that are there. In fact, launched an attack right as the ceasefire negotiations were starting. We believe trying to foil the ceasefire negotiations, injuring two of our veterans on the ground with grenades that were originated in Iran.
So who mans your operations now?
Yeah.
And is it ongoing? I mean, do you do it?
Yeah, it's ongoing. So every day, you know, we distribute between 1 and 3 million meals of food. It's a huge operation. I mean, one day this week, I was looking at the numbers, 37,000 boxes distributed in one day. A box has enough food to feed a family of five for 3.5 days. Unlike many of the UN organizations, like the World Food Program will have a trailer of flour, and they'll drop it somewhere, and people will get it. Our boxes have flour and oil and lentils and pasta, and it's enough in the caloric count. It's a kit. The caloric count is higher than the UN requirement, the UN average. Mm-hmm. The quality of the food is better. But what we did is we set up 4 secure distribution sites. Our plan is to open 8, including further into the Gaza Strip, and we do the mass distribution of food. So mm-hmm. So every day, sometimes twice a day at a distribution site, we distribute thousands of boxes of food to people in need. And not a single truck diverted. Okay, mm-hmm. so these images of like convoys of trucks being taken over by Hamas and through the international system, that doesn't happen with us because we prioritize security and safety.
So who provides the security and who provides the aid?
Yeah, so we have
for the aid?
So we have American contractors on the ground. So these are incredibly, incredibly experienced veterans of the U.S. Armed Forces who at this phase of their life have decided they want to feed people. You have experienced veterans, not because they know how to use weapons, it's because they know how not to use them. Mm. Okay, so these are incredibly, incredibly experienced people whose job is to get the food securely into the distribution points and staged and distributed. And then they are helped by a group of incredible, incredibly brave local Gazans who come every day to help us distribute the food. And then also we have a community distribution mechanism. Some of our partners actually, despite the fact the UN, while we're talking, the UN is still boycotting us. By the way, Nina, there are right now, when I walked here to the Hudson Institute, I saw someone with a sign saying, somewhere in Washington, D.C., like, stop the blockade, let aid into the Gaza Strip, all this stuff. Right now, there are 950 trucks of aid from UN agencies in the Gaza Strip already that the UN will not distribute. Like, yesterday I wrote a letter to the head of OSHA, the head humanitarian official in the United Nations, begging him, if you're not going to distribute your food, let us distribute it for you. These people are starving. And till now, the UN continues to not be unwilling to work with us, which is crazy. And I think the reason why they won't work with us is because they're so invested in their existing system, and they have a sense of denial about how their system has been able to be hijacked, monetized, manipulated by a terrorist organization.
I remember when we were working together on getting aid to the Christians in Nineveh and the Yazidis, and the United States at that time was writing checks, basically blank checks to the UN for the aid, yet the aid for 4 years after ISIS attacked these minorities in Nineveh in Iraq didn't receive a penny of U.S. aid because the UN distributed it to the powers who be, and those powers were tied to the government or to terror groups, and they gave the money out as some kind of bribes or patrimony or for weapons. Who knows what they did?
Nina, there's not a conflict in the world where the existing humanitarian system hasn't prolonged that conflict. I'll give you some examples. In the Ethiopian Tigray conflict during the Biden administration, World Food Program flour was being used by the Ethiopian side through commercial manufacturing facilities to provide bread for the Ethiopian soldiers. And 60,000 metric tons of flour was stolen by the Tigrayan side. So simultaneously, whatever happened with that conflict, I'm not an expert on that conflict, whatever happened with that conflict, the humanitarian support was helping both sides of this conflict. There was a point in Somalia where, this is a bit of time ago, but the single highest revenue and piece of revenue in the entire Somalian economy was a $200 million, basically, chunk of payments that was being paid by the World Food Program to three different clans, armed clans, in Somalia in order to facilitate their food distribution. And ultimately, the estimate is somewhere between 12 and 17% of the food actually made it to the destination. In Assad, Syria, 51% of the aid, of all international money that went into Assad, Syria from the international humanitarian community, ended up in the hands of the Assad regime, because Assad required it to go through sanctioned banks, required it to be changed into local currency, required the UN to stay in a hotel controlled by Assad. I mean, everywhere you look, and it was your idea, actually, to in the first Trump administration, to bypass the UN in northern Iraq and to get the aid directly to the people in need, and it was transformative. And here we are, and the same broken system continues to have same issues.
It's really tragic on many levels, including the fact that the UN was created for a situation like this. You know, there was ideals that you'd have a neutral body that could break through the warring factions and transcend all that and ensure the security and safety of the people. And it's instead been captive by all sorts of malign actors. And we saw that in elsewhere in the Middle East, and you know, to some extent in China during COVID too. So, and I saw it during the Cold War, frankly. The UN is saying 1,000 Gazans have been killed by Israeli fire while seeking food. Can you shed some light on that situation and that statistic?
Yeah, so first of all, some context. So over the course of this entire war, the civilian death numbers that are reported by the UN, by many in the press, come from Hamas-controlled entities. So the Health Ministry in Gaza, which is controlled by Hamas, the Government Media Office, which is controlled by Hamas. Those figures, they don't distinguish between militant deaths and civilian deaths ever. It's part of the information war on the Hamas side to say that everyone killed in the Gaza Strip is a civilian. You know, so whatever, and no one really knows how many people have been killed in the Gaza Strip. But when GHF started operating, Hamas adapted their information operation and basically said that 100% of anyone killed in the Gaza Strip was killed in proximity to a Gaza Humanitarian Aid Foundation site, which was crazy. And what was even crazier is that the press just reported it as if it was true. In fact, at Rutgers University, the National Contagion Research Institute, which studies disinformation and misinformation, they released a report recently that analyzed the 50 or so, it's like 52 or 54, most consumed stories about GHF. And 80% of those stories included information that originated with Hamas, but only 49, 50% of the time did those media outlets even disclose to the public that the information originated with Hamas. So when it comes to this number, this is the context of this number. That's one thing we know. The second thing that we know is that while we've been operating in the Gaza Strip in an active war zone, not during a ceasefire, for sure there have been civilians killed in the Gaza Strip in proximity to aid sites. For sure it's happened. The IDF has said that they're responsible for some of that. It's, as best as we could tell, a pretty small number. One is too many. And we're always complaining to the IDF and working with the IDF because the IDF is the professional military in the Gaza Strip, so they have to, you know, the humanitarian corridors and everything. This is who you have to work with. The thing about the IDF, though, is every time there's an accusation, they investigate it, they release the information publicly. But what we also know is that Hamas has killed many more people, many, many more people, probably hundreds of people, in proximity, actually mainly to UN aid distribution sites, in order to allege that those deaths were at GHF or that they were killed by the IDF. So this is part of a disinformation campaign. And like most disinformation campaigns, there's like an element of truth baked in, but then the story is made up from there. And so the actual fact is at the GHF, we have not had a single person shot at our distribution sites. at all, okay? In fact, there have only been two moments of violence in our distribution sites. The first one was when Hamas threw two grenades at our American workers that, thank God, recovered. And the second one was something that we disclosed. We're talking today. This is about a little over a week ago. We had Hamas instigators manage to get in one of our distribution sites and provoke basically a stampede where there were a number of casualties in a portion of the distribution site. But even in this case, it was Hamas that got in with weapons and provoked this violence. And we were the ones who disclosed it. It didn't come from the Gaza Health Ministry or any of these things. It came from us when we had an incident at one of our sites, because we have eyes on our sites. Like, we publicly disclosed it.
So I don't understand.
So this 1,000-person number is a sham number.
Being linked. Well, maybe a sham number, but say that there are hundreds.
Yeah.
Where is that happening if it's not happening at your sites? They said as they were seeking food that was being distributed. Where is that happening?
It's happened in various places. So one time it happened in proximity to a UN site, sort of in the center of Gaza. Another time it happened in a WFP site just as WFP trucks were going into Gaza in the north of the Gaza Strip,
at least the World Food Program.
The World Food Program, and the World Food Program, by the way, they speak out of both sides of their mouth. They tell the press that there's no diversion of their aid whatsoever. And then, simultaneously, if you go to their X account, they have a statement saying at a certain point in June, on one day of their 44 trucks that they sent into the Gaza Strip, only 9 of them made it to their ultimate destination. So they're like, you know, they're telling all these stories. There have been a few incidents that took place within a kilometer or 2 kilometers from our distribution sites. Of course, it's a war zone. We can't control what happens outside of our distribution sites. But for the press to accuse the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation of being responsible for something totally out of our control, you know, outside of our distribution sites. And by the way, they never do that with the United Nations. You will not see a single report accusing the United Nations of anything when 100 people die, you know, seeking their flour.
So I read about fences going up, separating the military, the Israeli military, from the distribution lines, I guess, for lack of a better term. I guess it's not really a line, but group. What are those fences about? Is this protocol, or is this something you're trying to invent as you go along to ensure security, to keep a distance, to keep the IDF from feeling threatened, that they're not being that they're not advancing towards them?
I mean, the IDF has an incredibly difficult job here, mm-hmm. because they are, mm-hmm. while engaged, the difference, you know, this is sort of beyond GHF. The GHF mission is just to feed people, but just to answer your question, you know, in this war, you have a professional military, and you have a terrorist group. A professional military as best as we can tell, abides by all the laws of war, all the laws of armed conflict, all of these things. They investigate things. They handle themselves very professionally on everything. And then we have a terrorist group that dresses as civilians. They abide by no rules of armed conflict. In fact, they intentionally defy them.
It's totally asymmetrical.
So you have an asymmetrical terrorist organization, and you have a professional military, and they're colliding. We've asked the IDF as a professional military that they, as humanitarian actors, we have to feed these people. Okay, these people need food, and we're there to give them food. And they have a very difficult job, which is to create a humanitarian corridor that allows people to access our food. Meanwhile, there are all these crazy things that happen in this environment. So for instance, we have very specific channels where we communicate to the people of Gaza in Arabic on the ground. So we say when we're open, when we're closed, we give specific instructions. But Hamas will spoof that. So Hamas will tell, they will use disinformation to tell people to go to the wrong place at the wrong time. And then, you know, they'll bust agitators in to try to create some kind of incident. So as the IDF creates this humanitarian corridor, it's happening in this very, very complex environment. And it's a war zone, and there are going to be tragedies.
Well, it is a war zone. It's a battle zone. It's an incredible challenge to distribute anything to civilians. And I'm just wondering, you know, what your thoughts are for going forward. Are there, is there improvements that could be implemented? Are there, what about the neighboring countries, the Arab countries, Turkey, which was, you know, one time giving aid to Gaza? Can they be enlisted in some way? Are they willing to do that?
Our position is to work with anybody, any good faith actor that we can, mm-hmm. in order to get more food to the people of Gaza. I mean, this is the profane thing about all of this, because we have the United Nations, whose job is actually to do these things, and they will not coordinate with us. I mean, every single day, one of us contacts. I wrote the Secretary General a month and a half ago, right after our local aid workers were killed, and I asked him to condemn this in order to keep our aid workers safe. Secretary General never, aside from never sending me a letter back, never answering my letter, refusing to meet with me, he delegated the meeting to the head of OSHA, who was literally, I have the email, he was too busy, his schedule was too demanding to meet with me, so he delegated it down to someone else. Like, I mean, this is the situation we're in. So we have all these humanitarian actors that allege that they care about these people, but they're literally letting food rot, not outside of the Gaza Strip, it's already staged in the Gaza Strip. Okay, they can distribute. It's a lie that the UN is not authorized to bring food. The UN is currently authorized not only to bring food in the Gaza Strip, they can bring as much food and as much of anything they want to bring in the Gaza Strip, but they're not doing it because they say they can't do it safely. And we're saying to them, the one thing we do is get massive quantities of food into the Gaza Strip and do it safely. So we're willing to work with any good faith actor to help these people. We sincerely, sincerely care about
Distribute their aid if they were willing to do that?
Absolutely distribute their aid. We could distribute not only their food aid, we could distribute all of their aid. And we even say to them, Nina, like, if there's something that we do that you don't like, okay, we'll change it. Let's sit down. Let's not confuse decision-making and problem-solving. Let's make a decision to help these people, and we'll adjust here or adjust there in order to help these people. But what they say to us is they say, well, you don't abide by humanitarian principles, and there are four of them. Humanity, impartiality, independence, and neutrality. We abide by all of those principles. But they say, no, the one you don't abide by is neutrality because you communicate with the IDF. And yet, the definition of neutrality is that your humanitarian assistance isn't able to be diverted by an armed actor.
Exactly.
Every ounce of humanitarian assistance that has gone into the Gaza Strip from the United Nations has been able to be diverted not only by an armed actor, by a globally designated terrorist organization.
A lot of people on the outside think that the UN has its own teams of internationally trained professionals who march into these war zones and do this, but they don't. They rely on the local powers, and I've seen that personally.
The whole thing is political.
Yeah.
I've become much more cynical through this, and you know me a long time. I err on the optimist side.
Yes, you do.
Sometime to my to learn later, but I've become much more cynical over the course of this because I've just come to the conclusion that these people, many of them, in suits and ties in Geneva and New York City, hosting conferences all around the world, collecting piles of cash from countries in order to help people.
They're just politicians.
Yeah. They're just politicians. And they're not humanitarians.
Right. What about, you know, Hamas is demanding that the Red Crescent, the Palestinian Red Crescent, do the food distribution. What about that idea?
I think.
Do you know anything about that?
I'm skeptical of anything Hamas demands. Mm-hmm. And I think the international community is obligated to take control of this problem, because the fact is, if Hamas, if you know, at the beginning, I don't know where things eventually stood, but at the beginning of the ceasefire negotiations, on the first night of the ceasefire negotiations, we were told, you know, again, I wasn't at the ceasefire negotiations, but we were told that the Hamas's number one demand was that the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation be shut down. Now, that should just tell you all you need to know. I'm not surprised by that from Hamas. I am surprised that a United Nations that's funded by the United States and Europe, all our taxpayer money, everything else, would have the exact same position as Hamas. The United Nations has basically become the press secretary for Hamas.
It seems that way. Now, our Middle East envoy, Steve Wyckoff, is off this week to negotiate the truce further. One of his demands, or one of his talking points, I guess, is on this creating a humanitarian corridor. What can you tell us about that and that idea and what it means exactly?
We support surging humanitarian aid for the Palestinians in Gaza. They need the food. It has to happen. They need help. But it can't happen in a way that prolongs the conflict and allows a globally designated terrorist organization to decide who gets helped and who doesn't. Mm-hmm. Because a ceasefire between Israel and between Hamas is not a ceasefire between Hamas and the people of Gaza. Okay? And for sure, if they have control over the humanitarian assistance, they're going to use it for nefarious purposes. We have to flood the zone with help, 100% flood the zone with help. And also, I mean, GHF is no threat to these other aid organizations. We're not there to replace anyone. We're there to subsidize and collaborate and work together. Mm-hmm. What we have demonstrated, though, Nina, is that it was a false choice that the international aid community was making. They believed that the cost of doing business was that 30%, 40%, sometimes 50, 60, 70% of your aid was going to be diverted out of your control, used for other nefarious purposes. GHF, taking a, sometimes say, a Silicon Valley approach, a first principles approach, like what is the one problem to solve? We have to stop the diversion of aid. And not only have we stopped the diversion of aid, we've proven that that was a false choice. It can be done better. And by the way, everything we do is more cost effective than everything the United Nations does.
Last question. Do you think that Hamas believes that whoever controls the distribution of aid gets control of Gaza in the future? Because it's unclear what's going to happen, a day or a year from now in Gaza.
I mean,
is that what the stakes are? Is it, in other words, giving Hamas this what it wants, on this aid distribution? Empowers Hamas again to be in control of Gaza.
I mean, the interesting thing about us is that our folks on the ground interact with Gazans every day. And the people that we're interacting with every day, they feel freer. And in fact, when we started operating, one of the most common questions we received it again and again and again, is the food really free? Because they were not used to that.
That says a lot.
They were used to the, and by the way, there still are these like markets in Gaza, and we, for sure, some of our food is ending up in these local markets, but the price of commodities have gone through the floor because Hamas was not only controlling the diverting food, they were also controlling the supply of food in the Gaza Strip. So, our mission is not a political mission, it's not a military mission, it's none of these things. Our mission is just to feed people. But the people that we interact with every day, they feel freer by the fact that they're getting this food and with no strings attached whatsoever.
Well, that ends our conversation. I want to thank you, Johnny, for sharing your insights and your experience with us. It's very helpful. The headlines news just does not give us the whole news. And I wish you every good thing and safety in your future endeavors.
Thank you. Thank you, Nina. Thanks for having me.